The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast,
foretold in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
As darkness falls across the heartland, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody. Welcome to our humble bunker. We're speaking to you on now, let's see, Monday, November the 7th, instead of Sunday, November the 6th.
Yes, we changed times and we
fell back one day.
25 hours. So actually, we've both been recovering from various ailments. This cold has been, it has blighted our lives.
It truly has. You could still hear in my voice. My voice was fine there for a while, and now it's sort of cutting in and out at various times and still feeling a little tired. So if you are dealing with the current virus going around in your area, oh, boy, do we feel for you.
Amen to that. And I interviewed David W. Lowe about his new book, Deconstructing Lucifer, yesterday for A View from the Bunker. And it's a good thing I've got, not just the phone. I mean, we're blessed that we've got the equipment here where I've got essentially a cough switch on the microphone. Because, you know, without the cough switch, the interview would have been punctuated by...
And they do. They sound just like that, too. So, they're old people coughs.
Exactly. So, thankfully, not much of
that
today.
We've never smoked a day in our lives, and yet we were coughing like, 30-year-old smokers.
I actually did when I was in college. I took a role in a college play, and the character in the play smoked. So, I smoked during the run of the play and thankfully was able to quit as soon as the play was over.
Your mom and dad let you smoke cigarettes on stage?
I was, 19, 20, whatever I was at the time. They didn't have much to say about that. So
you couldn't use those fake, remember those cigarettes that were fake and the tip even glowed?
Yeah, yeah. I got to the director of the play, who actually went on to have some roles in Hollywood. I remember very distinctly he actually had a cover picture in it was the local version of TV Guide, the Sunday supplement that they stick in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, his picture was on the cover once for Elvis and Me, which was a TNT original movie back like 1989 or something. But anyway, he wanted the character to really have realism, so he wanted me to smoke unfiltered Camels, which would have been what this character had smoked back in. It was The Glass Menagerie was the play. And Menagerie, which was Tennessee Williams?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the brother of... The female lead kind of tells the story in retrospect and then steps into the action. But the director split the character. So I played the older Tom. And, by then he's gone off to sea as a merchant sailor and, probably would have smoked unfiltered Camels. Well, I tried one once and nearly passed out. So he let me get away with, some ultra light, ultra low tar. So maybe that's why quitting was so easy after we were done.
Honey,
but with my lungs, my allergies, I didn't.
You're just like Herman Cain, layers and layers are peeling back like an onion.
That would probably come out if I ever decided to run for president. Of course, if that was the only thing, I'd be glad.
The only thing I think would come out on you. That may be a barbershop habit.
I don't know. This guy's addicted to barbershop seventh chords. The political scene in the United States, once again, proving that it's a blood sport. Today, Gloria Allred, shrill feminist attorney, comes out with a client from
Sharon
Chicago.
Sharon rolls her eyes.
Yeah. Who's making accusations against Mr. Cain. And they may well be true. We there's no way to know. It's a he said, she said thing, as many of these accusations are, sadly.
They are. But however, Herman Cain, whoever is advising him
yeah.
is not doing him any good, because he has said, he came out originally and said, nope, never happened, don't know anything about it, don't remember it. Then he said, yeah, it happened, don't remember it. Then he said, yeah, I remember a little of it. Then, okay, it did happen, I remember the settlement. His mm-hmm. story is evolving over time.
Yeah, and the sad thing about that is the...
and that's being kind.
The Politico, which broke the story, notified Kane's political advisor a week before they published the story. So they had a week to get their story straight, and still Herman Kane was pretending like, well, I didn't remember it. It was 10 years ago. Well, okay, I remember a little bit, but I'd remember all. Now I remember everything. Well, okay, now this story, forget everything I said before. This is the truth.
Let's talk yeah. about his campaign manager. I mean, Mr. Smokin' in the ad.
Yeah.
That's not helping him either.
No, what they should have had was a picture of Barack Obama smoking in the ad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As the president, you'll notice, has proudly declared himself tobacco-free. But reports from the G20 meetings over in, where were they meeting, in Paris? Or
yes,
Sam
I think so.
Sam Doxson didn't go this year. So
he's just fed up with the whole
disgusted.
Bunch.
He's disgusted. But reports from over there are that the president is chewing a Nicorette like crazy, Nicorette gum. The president also said, I don't smoke, in the White House.
You know, in the White
parsing,
House, I
yeah,
love
parsing
that.
His words. So, you know, the Kane campaign would have been better served by showing the president smoking at the end of the ad.
Boy, Henny, you're still sounding like me too. It's tough. I you know,
mm-hmm.
Lord love you for listening to this. You poor people. You poor people.
We've sprayed the MP3 with Lysol, so you're okay. So meanwhile, while we're looking at that here, we've got, the big asteroid coming right at us. YU-55 or YU Dirty Rat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to pass, 21,000 miles from Earth? Is that the...
21 or 210?
Yeah,
I don't know.
21
anyway,
would probably be really close. Yeah. I think you're probably right. 201,000.
Yeah, it's going to be close enough. And here's what really gets me about the passing of YU-55. I really don't think it's going to hit the Earth, but the things that are happening in conjunction with this are really, you know, unsettling. I don't know if you have been looking at the forums, but the talk about, well, first of all, we've talked about this before. I think I mentioned this last week. Did we do a show last week? I can't remember. If we talked about this, if we didn't, I'll come in again. I think last week we talked about this week's exercise,
the
National Emergency Alert System test.
Right.
Put quote marks around the word test, because the local cable stations have been told that they may have to. I feel like I'm having to talk really loudly. I don't know why that is.
Let me turn the headphones up just a little bit. How's that?
That helps immensely. Thank you very much. I was really starting to strain my voice. The local TV stations have been told that they may have to have a voice disclaimer at the beginning of these ads, because the ads themselves may or may not have a crawl at the bottom saying this is only a test.
Mm-hmm.
So before the ad, before the test rather, that the local station should be saying, this is a test of the National Emergency Alert System. If this were an actual emergency, you would blah, blah, blah. You know, just the way they do when, sorry, my voice is really going, just the way they do when the local ones, you know, because our local radio stations, you used to do this on the radio station all the time. They
sure.
had the emergency alert tests.
By law,
same thing.
Do it once
exactly.
a week.
Have to do it. Exactly. TV stations are no different. This one's national. It's the first ever national alert system test.
Mm-hmm.
And it may well feature our president coming in and having either a pre-recorded or a live. Boy, honey.
Excuse me.
Or a live little, you know, 30-second blurb where he says this is a test or this is not a test.
Mm-hmm.
But that, in conjunction with that, is something called the Exercise Pacific Wave 11.
Hmm.
The PAC Wave 11. This is practicing the response to a very large Pacific tsunami that affects the entire Ring of Fire coastline.
Oh, okay. So,
in other words, something big That's the size of YU-55.
Yeah.
Hitting the Pacific, or a big earthquake. And anyway, the resultant tsunami is what they're testing for. That's what they're telling us. Anyway.
So let's look at the timeline of this then. The YU-55's closest flyby, excuse me, I got a cough drop in my mouth now, is supposed to take place at 6:28 Eastern Standard Time. That is GMT minus 5, Tuesday, November the 7th, or November the 8th, excuse me.
There are two times on it, though. It also says that it's coming by 7th and 8th is what you're seeing? I thought it was 8th and 9th.
Well, the 8th. It's 23:28 Greenwich Mean Time. So very close to midnight Greenwich Mean Time, which is about 6:28 p.m. Eastern, 5:28 p.m. our time tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then the national test takes place at 2 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. 2 p.m. Eastern Wednesday, and then the Pacific Wave exercise also
takes
place on Wednesday.
November 9th and 10th.
Yeah, Wednesday and Thursday.
Exactly.
Hmm.
All of these things happening at the same time.
I see.
At a time when I think it could easily be said that Israel is becoming a true cup of trembling to the nations, because I got to tell you, if Israel bombs Iran, mm-hmm. that is going to cause World War III.
Very likely. I know Muslim nations don't all get along with one another. I mean, we in the West tend to think that they do, but the fact is the Sunni and Shia nations, especially around the Persian Gulf, don't all get along. The Saudis are not pleased about the Iranian ambitions to become a regional power, and they will do what they can to try to suborn Iran's ambitions. But I think they hate the Israelis more. So
yes.
I think they would close ranks if Israel were to launch a preemptive strike. And there have been rumblings coming out of Israel in recent days that they are closer to a consensus on the need for a preemptive strike than they have been in a long, long time. And the president of Israel, not the prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, mm-hmm. the president,
Perez.
Shimon Peres,
yeah.
Said that the world, in his words, is approaching the military option on Iran.
Well, the world is, exactly. And what I have read is that the UK is ready to back up Israel. UK and the US are ready to back up Israel. But at the same time, this is sort of backdoor diplomacy, but at the mm-hmm. same time, the front door diplomacy, the president of the United States and other prominent speakers for the US are saying that the U.S. does not want Israel to do this. And if Israel were to bomb Iran, that it would be a very unfortunate thing for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we may have to sanction you if you start doing things like that. But backdoor, supposedly, the U.S. and the U.K. are ready and have been practicing this scenario.
Right. The Israelis have made a point of talking up the recent exercises they did from Italian air bases, their long-range bombing capability, the ability to take out targets within Iran. Iran is responding with similar threats, saying that if Israel attacks, 4 Iranian missiles could kill 1 million Israelis. And Israel is a nation of how many people?
What? 3-4 million? I don't know. Probably not very many.
Looking that up now, yeah. 7.6 million.
Oh, more than I thought.
So about the size of the Chicago metropolitan area. But you take 1 million out of there, that's like, that would be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
And for the U.S. to, be suggesting sanctions at a time when nukes are flying back and forth would be, not even worth discussing. This, as you say, could be the cup of trembling that was prophesied.
Well, we have talked with a number of guests about the Psalm 83 war, if indeed that is telling us about a war to come. It's certainly an alliance, and one that, as I understand it, really hasn't occurred yet in mm-hmm. history. We've also got Ezekiel 38. That is definitely a war. Gog and Magog, the hook and the jaw to bring Gog down from the uttermost north.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize, people. I can't speak.
Yeah. And I'm having to talk around a tickle that's right here in my breadbasket.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, except it's on the inside, so I can't get at it.
Oh, no.
That's where the coughing is from. Excuse me.
I know. I just, it's like.
So we really apologize. This is probably the worst PID radio show that you will ever hear.
I don't know about that. I've done some pretty bad ones. And I'll do worse. Doggone it.
Well, between the sniffling, the snorting, and the sound of this cough drop, this is going to be a real.
And not one of those is coming from Sam. And
normally, Sam is the one who makes all these additional.
And the reason
noises.
We didn't do the show last night, of course, is because we were coughing, and I was having a really bad day. I hurt so badly last night I could barely move. So the last thing I wanted to do was have to climb down the stairs and come down here into the basement to do the bunker.
Yeah.
You know, into our bunker to do the show. But feeling better that way today, just can't talk for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe we're not supposed to be talking.
Well, you know, there's a lot to discuss, which is why we're here. Getting around the politics and the things going on in the Middle East, which is.
I have to ask you about this. You didn't. I did not post this, and I'm assuming you did. Hobby Lobby was in the bidding war for the Crystal Cathedral. Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, we're talking now about.
That's a total left turn.
The PID news page at Facebook, where we post most of these articles that we discuss on the show. So if you've got Facebook, or even if you're not logged into Facebook, you can still access the page.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll direct you to the full articles in the various sources that we, you know, look at and bring in. Hobby Lobby is owned by a fellow who is has been described by some, and I'm not going to say this is an absolute because I've not researched it, but has been described by some as a pretty hardcore dominionist. Be that as it may, Hobby Lobby is known to be owned by people who are who are professing Christians.
What and are they planning on doing with the Crystal Cathedral?
Well, they were planning to lease it to
to King's University.
King's University, right? A Bible college and seminary out in Los Angeles. It appears that Chapman University will wind up with the Crystal Cathedral. The Los Angeles Diocese of the Roman Catholic Church, or Orange County Diocese, was in the running and may still be in the running.
So they haven't made a definitive decision.
No.
They're just
University,
not letting Hobby Lobby in.
Yeah, Chapman University is the preferred buyer. And apparently they have agreed to pay about $51.5 million. Hobby Lobby had offered $47.5 million. So, I know. It kind of catches you by surprise because you don't think about Hobby Lobby. Why would but the owners of Hobby Lobby are very committed and outspoken, professing Christians.
Our friends on the West Coast may have, many of you may have been in the Crystal Cathedral yourselves. I was in there one time years ago, and I have to tell you, it was a very strange experience. The place did not feel like a church in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. It felt like a business.
And it was probably by design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. There was a story out a few years ago. Actually, more recently than that. I think it was last year, and I don't think we ever talked about it. I flagged the article, meant to talk about it, about a Dallas.
There was a flag on the plane.
Yeah, a church in Dallas that was proudly announcing it was about ready to build a $2.5 million. Maybe more than that. $2.5 million doesn't buy you a whole lot of building anymore. But it just made me wonder. Do these things really honor God? I mean, and this is I know there's a long history of this. I mean, some of the beautiful cathedrals in Europe that date back centuries. Absolutely spectacular works of art. But is that really ever what God intended for His house?
Is this rhetorical? Do you want me to tell you? What my opinion is?
I do want your opinion.
I don't think that we should be building beautiful buildings. I don't. I think they are beautiful buildings, but they speak of man's handiwork. I mean, they're nothing more than monuments to a great architect and great architecture,
mm-hmm.
and to the men who built it, the men who designed it. They speak of wealth that is wasted in stone. You know, that wealth can go many other directions to help the true believers, the true Church of Christ, which are the people who trust in Jesus Christ as their Savior. The temple of the Holy Spirit, if you want to put it this way, is our body. It's my body and your body, those of us who are believers. In the first century church, they didn't have to have, gorgeous temples to go and worship. They went to people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to have a church building, That's fine. But, you know, honestly, it can be very humble.
Mm-hmm.
These massive edifices are wastes of money, and I think they're more about man than God.
Well, and that was the and I agree with you, and that's why I had flagged this article to talk about it. But you know, I found the article, surprisingly enough. It was from last spring, May of 2010. First Baptist Church of Dallas laid out $115 million toward the construction of a new campus. And, you know, just that sum, and then the word campus connected to it.
I know. You should never have such a big church that campus applies.
And maybe that's a pet peeve of mine, because I see more and more of the really popular mega churches, the ones that, mm-hmm. that are usually...
Purpose-driven?
Often, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And very often you'll find the lead pastor is a young guy who looks like he's maybe 30, has a really funky haircut and you know, really trendy glasses, and doesn't wear, you know, a tie. Usually something a little more casual when he's up there preaching. And they will often have multiple campuses.
You know, honestly, I don't really care what a pastor wears. He can be up there in jeans. Doesn't matter to me as long as the doctrine, as long as what he is saying and preaching is dead on the money.
It's, you know, and it's not the casual nature of the clothing that you know, the reason that I call it to attention, it's the clothing is casual because it's trendy.
Exactly. I'm glad to, I just wanted to make sure that we knew where you were coming from on that.
Right. No, because I would have no problem, you know, dressing down somewhat, you know, in front of a church. You know, I think
as long as you're not showing up wearing, you know, just, you know, okay, I've been gardening, I'm just going to show up in any old thing. I do think there's a certain amount of respect.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the Lord isn't demanding that we, you know, go to church wearing formal wear, but, you know, you do your best, offer your best for the Lord. I mean, show a little care and concern, you know, just as you say, respect. And I think the respect in these, you know, multi, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars committed to, you know, to building these campuses. You're right. It's I love the way you put it. It's riches wasted in stone.
They are. They really are. And here's a note. While I'm on this soapbox, I'm taller. And I think that somehow my voice is louder when I'm on this soapbox. But while I'm here, let me just say the more than the campus idea, the notion that you've got a church that is so big that it has to be called a campus because you have multiple buildings or multiple wings, for goodness sake. If you get a church that has to build such a gigantic edifice to house your 10,000 members at one service or 10,000 members or 20,000 members at three services, then your church is too big. There is no way, even in these so-called small groups, air quotes there, that you are really going to service, to minister to and disciple the way that you're supposed to within the church. Let's get back to small congregations.
Yeah. And that's going to require parents who look for sound doctrine and not a church that has a lot of programs to distract their children.
Or a lot of programs so the parents can just drop off the kids.
Well, that's my point.
And go and do something else and let the kids be entertained.
Well, yes, exactly, my point. And the main reason, I contend that multiple campuses, as opposed to planting new churches...
Yes.
New standalone churches is that you are essentially then creating a downline network, like multi-level marketing. You create a new campus, and their donations, their giving, there comes back to the home church and the head pastor, who now has four locations funneling money his way instead of just one.
You know, that is so true, and that's really creepy, and I think that happens way too often, that you'll have a parent mega congregation that forms satellite churches or daughter churches that have to pay back to the that becomes, like you say, a pyramid scheme. I see no problem though with a church that is growing, saying, you know what, many of you are coming over from X fill in the blank of a city,
right?
Why don't we plant a church over there?
Right,
that will be an independent body that doesn't have to pay us a dime.
Shepherd the church along until it's ready to stand on its own two feet,
and that's all you do.
But, you know, that doesn't seem to be the trend now. And,
In fact, you know,
really
you met with a guy over in a nearby city who is doing that very thing. He and his family are planting a church north of here, because there's a need for another body.
Right. A lot of people are coming from their town and driving quite a ways to a much larger city north of here. And so, they're working on planting a new church in their smaller community. But the trend seems to be you get a seeker-friendly, youth-oriented church that draws a lot of people in with a great show on Sunday mornings. And then you go out and you create satellite campuses for this church rather than planting new churches that will eventually be pastored by pastors of their own, who and then stand on their own 2 feet. And, I just think that's a disturbing trend.
It is. It really is. Well, I'm going to take a left turn to this story that I just think is really interesting. Again, it's on the PID News wall of Facebook. CIA's vengeful librarian team will be monitoring Facebook, Twitter, and reporting back to Obama. I've got a friend who is a librarian, and she commented on this. Love her to death. Mm. She says, ooh, watch those librarians. This was one of the few security measures that came out after 9/11 that has been the most useful as far as identifying security issues. So if you don't want them tracking you, stay off the grid. Yes.
This relates to the presentation that I gave in Branson and last year in Canton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. The government is watching the social networks and using the information that we willingly offer up to put together profiles of us who are being critical, perhaps. And I made the point in the article, and again, this is not my own original research. There are many others who have done this research and said, hey, did you know this, that one of the first venture capital firms to invest in the fledgling Facebook was the venture capital wing of the Central Intelligence Agency. What benefit does the CIA have? Yeah, and this is a VC firm that invests in new intelligent technologies or technologies that they believe will benefit the intelligence community within 2 to 3 years. So, I mean, what benefit does the CIA see in Facebook becoming a profitable organization? Well,
Facebook,
the fact that all of us are supplying all of this information, pictures and locational information.
Oh, yeah, and between, you add Facebook to Google. I know that they're separate companies, but one day they'll merge. Mm-hmm. Right now, one will gobble up the other one.
Probably.
Right now, between those two entities, everything you have ever done is tracked. Everything. In fact, yesterday I logged onto Facebook, and the first thing I saw was that I won't name the person. One of my friends on Facebook, two of them, in fact, so-and-so has just read the article, blah, blah, blah. You know, the other person has just read the article. These are things that you did off of Facebook.
Right. But
so it's tracking everything you're doing on the net, pulling it in, and making that part of the conversation.
Right. And every now and then a story will pop up. And then disappear shortly thereafter about how Google's Street View camera cars driving around in Europe were scooping up information and passwords from Wi-Fi networks that it was driving past, from homes and businesses that they were driving past. Now, we're supposed to believe that that wasn't happening here in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
But the question is why Google was out there sniffing for Wi-Fi networks with their camera cars in the first place. They claimed it was a mistake. I think not. Likely that is taking place here in the United States as well. And there, you know, bits it will come out like this every now and again that, more information than you think is making its way out there to people that you don't know about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there's an article. You okay there, honey?
No, I still have another lung.
For those of you who think that Google Plus is the answer, forget it. They are going to go the same way eventually because Google wants to track everything you do. Mm-hmm. So here's what it is. If you really are very, very nervous about having your activities known, stay off the grid. Follow my librarian friend's advice and stay off the grid. if you want to be on the grid and communicate with your family and your friends via Facebook, Twitter, or Google Plus, or any other social networking site, or if you just want to do research and you need to be on the internet, perhaps as a business person you need to be on the internet, do so with the understanding that everything you do is tracked. It's just like with your smartphones. Everything you do is tracked. Everywhere you go is accessible. They know what you're doing and where you're doing it.
That's right. If you drive a vehicle, it's General Motors. You've got OnStar. Even if you're not subscribing to OnStar, they can track where the vehicle is.
And let's not forget, some of you may have heard this in the past, so please forgive me for repeating. If you're new to PID Radio, welcome, by the way. If you're new to PID Radio, then you may not realize that On is another name for Osiris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you've got a GPS device, like a GPS device that I use in my car, it's essential. I would say it's nearly essential.
I think for you it is.
Yeah. But the fact is that it's bouncing a signal up there, and presumably as a unique identifier so that it can communicate with the satellite that it's receiving the proper signal. I presume that that can be accessed and tracked if a government agency wanted to do it. And I don't think in today's world it's not easy to truly get off the grid.
No, it really isn't. Because I think that eventually, if you want to be entertained, if you want to play games, if you want to conduct business, you will be required to be on the grid.
Yeah. Now, we don't say all this to get you really freaked out and paranoid.
No, just informing you. But don't be freaked out and paranoid. For goodness sake, if you have Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, there is nothing to get freaked out about.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not going to be an easy ride. We're told, Jesus said flat out, Christians or his followers would endure tribulation.
Exactly.
So
we know that regardless of when the rapture occurs, that you and I, we may face some tribulation. Certainly, there are believers in other parts of the world who are facing horrific persecution. Yeah. They are being beheaded. They're being arrested. They are being, in some places, crucified. Christians are not welcome in the Arab nations for the most part. They're not welcome in many other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting to the point where we're not welcome here.
Yeah. I don't think it would be unexpected that perhaps a Christian somewhere else on planet Earth dealing with the kind of tribulation that we here in America only read about. We'd have to ask the question like that line from The Princess Bride. I don't think he knows what that word means.
Yeah, I know.
To tribulation. A disturbing story from Germany. And we're not bringing this up because we want to pick on the Roman Catholic Church, because this is not unique to any particular denomination. But a story has been reported by LifeSite News, which is a news site online that does report and focus on the Roman Catholic Church and issues within the church, specifically Christian issues in general. A group of bishops, Germany's main bishops. Apparently, it's been disclosed, are 100% owners of one of the most profitable book companies in Germany, a book-selling company. This company,
distributing company?
Right,
okay.
Yeah. In addition to offering for sale many religious and books and items, also sells over 2,500 pornographic titles and additional books that are, highly offensive to Christian principles, occult, and so forth. And when this was brought to the attention of a spokesman by a member of the media, the spokesman said they promised immediate corrective action. However, it's been revealed since the story broke that concerned Roman Catholics in Germany have been trying to get the bishops to do something about this for 10 years. And in fact, in 2008, sent a 70-page dossier to Germany's main bishops saying, look, you guys own this company that's distributing pornography. What are you doing about this? What? So this is sort of like the Herman Cain response.
I was going to say very thing.
We didn't know about it. We'll fix it. Yes, we'll totally fix this right now.
Okay, yeah, we did get the – we did the nose.
Mm-hmm. It is a, according to the LifeSite News article, a $1.7 billion annual turnover. The company called Weltbild, W-E-L-T-B-I-L-D, a second largest book-selling company in Germany. Let's see, also sells books, besides the pornography, also sells books promoting Satanism, the occult, and anti-Christian atheist propaganda. More than that, the bishops, the German bishops, also are 50% owners in another company, which actually produces the pornographic novels.
Oh, sorry, but that's the clincher. You know, it's one thing to... it's one thing to be part owner of a company that... Were they part owner?
100%
Well, then they should have known. It's one thing to... Seriously, I mean, if you've got millions of titles, and they may have, to know that there are some in there that... But they did know. They've known for 10 years.
For 10 years.
But it's another to publish it. It's entirely different to be a publisher of pornographic materials.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get away with preaching chastity while you're selling pornography. And apparently they've been trying to do this for quite some time. Again, the response, we didn't know about it, was proven to be a lie. Because, again, this 70-page dossier was given to the main bishops in Germany 3 years ago, and still nothing has happened. Apparently, and this is something, again, that we want to make clear is not unique to the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, there's an article at Heroscope, the Heroscope blog, published by Sarah Leslie here within the last couple of weeks, in which she relates some of her experiences, which she talked about when I interviewed her on A View from the Bunker, as a... member of Iowa's Right to Life organization, getting involved in politics, and finding out as she and her husband got involved in the Right to Life movement of things that were brought to their attention. And I'm not giving specifics, just, you know, as examples, say, you know, pastor who, you know, has to pay for an abortion for a girlfriend to avoid scandal, or a prominent couple in a church paying for an abortion for their daughter. One woman who actually volunteered at an abortion clinic because she said it was a ministry, because she was there holding the hand of the woman and praying for her while the woman was killing her child, or paying to have her child killed, her unborn child. But how far do our churches, religious leaders, prominent church members go in rationalizing the rationalizing evil, because the humiliation would damage would be damaging to the greater good? Well, yes, we could divest ourselves of these pornographic titles.
They're too big to fail.
Yes, we could divest ourselves, our company, of these pornographic titles, but it would cut into the profits, and the money is being used for such good. You know, so the point of Sarah Leslie's article, The Heroscope, and I think the bigger point here, when we're looking at this story out of Germany, we compromise with evil and rationalize it as somehow being for the greater good. How do we in America expect revival when there's no true repentance? I mean, that was the point of her article, and I'm not sure exactly applies to the case out of Germany here, but I think it's eye opening and a real warning sign for those of us who are seeking you know, the Lord's will, that it's very easy when you're trying to do a good work to be sidetracked, you know, and to begin rationalizing these compromises, and getting back to the political references that we used to open the show. That we rationalize partnering with the enemy, or making compromises on things that we wouldn't do if they were standalones, in order to justify, you know, or to rationalize continuing on because we're doing a greater good.
I'm rambling here.
The cold meds are.
Let me use an example, a well-known example from the Old Testament. The story of David, King David, who happens to see Bathsheba taking a bath on the, you know, on the house over by the way. And he is he's enamored with her, and he has her brought over, and he has sex with her, and she conceives a child. Mm-hmm. Her husband Uriah is Uzziah.
Uriah.
Yeah, Uriah. I was right. Uriah is off at war. Mm-hmm. He's not there. So there's no way that David can, you know, let Uriah think he is the father because he's been at home also
sleeping
with his wife. So when Uriah, he calls Uriah back home.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells Uriah, go home, be happy, be merry, sleep with your wife, you know. And he doesn't. Oh, no, I can't do that. When my men are, you know.
Out in the field, yeah.
I can't do that. No, I'm just. And so he tries and tries, and Uriah will not do it. And so finally, he has Uriah put at the front.
Yeah, and tells Joab, okay, withdraw the men from around Uriah.
So that Uriah dies.
Right.
All because David believes that if it gets out, people will be shocked. I'm the king. I can't let this rumor get out. I can't let this story get out. It will be damaging to my people if they find out what their king has. And I didn't mean to do it. She tempted me. I'm mm-hmm. sure that he rationalized these things in his mind. Well, along comes Samuel,
mm-hmm.
who tells David.
Or was it? No, Samuel was dead by then. Nathan.
Nathan. Sorry. Yes, you're right. Nathan. You're right. No, it is Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
Who comes to David and tells him the story of what this man has done, but doesn't tell David he's the man who did it.
Right.
And David is outraged
mm-hmm.
that anyone would do something like this.
Yes.
And Nathan says, you're the man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nathan could have said, you know what? I found out about this. I'm going to let it slide. I'm not going to do anything about it because, honestly, he is the king. And if this gets out, then we don't want, we got to spin this some way. No.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't.
We can't impeach the king because it would it would look bad to the the succession problem politically would just be bad moms. And as Christians, we are not given the option. We're not told that it's okay to make these sorts of compromise. In fact, we're told what concourse hath righteousness with Belial.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, when it comes to politics and
when it comes to people in general, we are all sinful by nature. We all have a fallen nature within us. And there is none righteous, no, not one. Sam agrees. He says, I don't know, maybe it was Samuel. I like that name better than that Nathan thing.
So I'm not...
It was Nathan, Sam. Come here.
Trying to put words in the mouths of the German bishops, I can only imagine that the reason they didn't do anything about it or guess as to the reasons, and my guesses are either A, there was too much money to avoid, to rock the boat, or B, they didn't want to publicize it because they were afraid of the scandal it would cause and damage
the good
work.
Or C, both, all of the above.
And which is part of the reason that the, many of the incidents with the pedophile priests has been
exactly.
covered up.
Exactly,
and
let's just make sure are not picking on the Catholic Church. This is something that goes on within every denomination because every denomination has people who are fallen, by nature, no different than King David.
Which is why
who was called the apple of God's eye.
Yes, yes. And that's why I brought up the examples that Sarah Leslie cited in her article at Heroscope, because she was dealing with evangelicals mostly in mm-hmm. in the Right to Life movement there, and dealing with people who rationalized their behavior because of the scandal it would cause and the damage it would cause to the church or to the family's reputation. And we're such, we're doing such good work in the pro-life movement, and this would ruin our witness or whatever. But as we see in the example of David, which you very rightly bring up, the Lord, he's not buying it.
No,
he's not buying it. So sadly, Roman Catholic Church has shot itself in the foot in Germany, and a lot of people there, especially among the faithful, are very upset by what's been going on there. What else we got going on?
I'm looking at PIDnews.com, and that's where you'll find a whole lot of really wonderful headlines. We have we've set up a really nice array of politics and exopolitics and UFOs, and there's even military news in here. But I was just looking, and blanking out there. The White House, no evidence that ETs have reached out to us or even exist. That was at the Huffington Post. Odd little headline.
Yeah, and I found
today.
That too at MSNBC that the White House had posted a place for people to forward petitions to the government, you know, asking the government, you know, specific questions or initiatives or whatever. And many of them dealt with ET disclosure, you know, UFO disclosure. And so the White House finally opted to respond to two petitions asking the government to acknowledge the existence of extraterrestrial life. And now you can take it to the bank. The White House says no ET, no UFO cover up. Case closed.
And according to this, the mystery of the Phoenix UFO lights has been solved.
Oh, really?
This is at Fox News from today. Trying to, for some reason, my internet connection is really slow.
Huh.
On October 28th, four bright lights were seen and videotaped during a high school football game in Scottsdale, Arizona, near Phoenix. The strange lights, apparently these aren't the famous Phoenix lights. Exactly. They were, according to this, let me see. Seen by hundreds of people, at least two of them seemed to move slowly in the sky, sometimes blinking randomly. One fan at a high school took a video and posted it to YouTube. Several explanations were put forth to explain the mysterious lights, but of course the favorite explanation was spacecraft. Others weren't so sure and suggested the bright lights resembled nighttime skydivers with flares. Was it all prank or a hoax? Well, the story got more and more publicity. Helicopter pilot got in on it, and he was at an event, according to, no way, so what is it? And he knew a lot.
This is a very confusingly written article.
Badly written article. It looks to me like the headline is misleading, so forget I even mentioned it.
Yeah, and of course the article, and they'll have a tendency to do this, the picture that Fox News posted at the under the headline "Mystery of Phoenix UFO Lights Solved" is actually military flares used during the Lebanon-Israeli conflict from 2006.
Exactly,
had nothing to do with the Phoenix lights.
In fact, it's over the top. So forget you ever saw it.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of that, now that's a quote, by the way, from Millennium. But we are watching the X-Files,
mm-hmm.
starting with season one, watching them all the way through, and then we're going to watch all the way through the final season. If you've never seen The X-Files, we highly recommend you take the time. They are free for the streaming on Netflix if you have a Netflix subscription. If you don't have Netflix streaming, it's $10,
yeah.
if that, to get streaming only. And you can, for $50, purchase a Roku box, which will hook up to your television. And it's got a Wi-Fi card inside. It automatically streams those wonderful things right to your television, and you don't need cable. Cut the cable.
Hmm.
You know, you can just do with Netflix. It's remarkable what's on there. But it's so wonderful to watch these old programs. And there was something you and I saw the other day that was foreshadowing of an event that would come later, and I really can't at this moment think of what it was.
Oh gosh. It wasn't.
I should have written it down because there are so many references and lots of numbers.
Yeah.
1013 occurs over and over and over again.
Right. Of course, 1013 was the day, you know, October 13th, when the Knights Templars, purged by King Philip of France.
Philip the Fair.
Also
Philip
happens to be Chris Carter's birth date, so the creator of the
X-Files. At least that's what he says. I don't know if it really is or not, but that's what he claims.
No, that's why he named it 1013 Productions.
That's what he says.
He says, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't quite as obvious as that pilot episode of The Lone Gunman, which was the spinoff series from The X-Files, in which a plane was flown by remote control into the Twin Towers, or aimed at.
I knew what it was. I remember now. We were watching the episode with the astronaut who was possessed by the spirit of some Martian thing or something.
Yes.
And there was a reference to
Heat shielding,
and it was the same thing that went wrong with Columbia.
Yeah.
But that hadn't happened yet.
Right. Right. Because this episode aired in the first season, which was 1993. Columbia crash.
Was after you and I got married, I think.
Right. When did that take place? That was
2002, 2003?
Yes, 2003. February 1st, 2003.
10 years later.
Yeah. This entity that was possessing the head of the space program in the X-Files episode had sabotaged.
Former astronaut who on a spacewalk had been possessed mm-hmm. by this creature.
Yeah, and he had sabotaged the heat shield. And apparently that's the story, if I remember correctly, the Columbia, what had happened with
Well, not necessarily that an entity had sabotaged it.
No. But it was the same kind of damage, right? And so they had to change the descent trajectory in order to reduce the stress on the shields. So all was well, except for the colonel at the end who wound up jumping out a window. But
oh, you gave it away. If someone hasn't seen that yet, you gave it away.
Yeah, well, same. They borrowed that ending from The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it was interesting because there have been a couple of other things that we've caught too that kind of foreshadowed other events. We need to make notes on those things. But that was
I was thinking the same thing. I thought, you know, maybe while you're working during the day, perhaps I should go back and start again. We're in episode 12 or something like that. You know, there wasn't anything on television over the weekend, and you and I have been trying to write. So I've sort of had shows on in the background that provide an atmosphere that allow me to write. But honestly, these X-Files, I hadn't seen them in so long that I found myself just closing up the computer and just sitting and watching.
Yeah. It's difficult for me to write when the TV's on, but especially when it's something that's really interesting like that. So, I think, other than just watching, you know, just circling back around to, you know, what's going on in the Middle East and just keeping an eye on what's happening there.
Don't forget, let your friends know, if you have any friends especially who aren't on the internet, please make sure that they're aware that 2 p.m. Eastern time on the 9th, which is Wednesday of this week, that there will be a national emergency alert system test. Just in case the local TV channel that airs it, or it's also going to be on the radio, it's also going to be taking over your internet and perhaps even your smartphones, make sure that they know, in case there is no disclaimer, in case it does look a la the Orson Welles War of the Worlds event, like it's actually happening. Because there could be some people, especially people if there's no crawl and there's only a voice, people who are hearing impaired, you know, they may be terrified.
Yeah. Thankfully, I think somebody finally got it, you know, figured out that this could cause a War of the Worlds type event, and they've changed from the original plan, which was to interrupt television service for 3 minutes down to 30 seconds.
Yeah. There's a video, by the way, that I posted to, I think I posted it to the PID news wall, but we'll try to link to it. It's actually from FEMA, and it has two gentlemen from FEMA who are explaining why there may be no obvious crawl or information, that this is only a test. And it's a very odd video, because the first gentleman speaks and there's a little boxed inset of a woman who is translating into sign language, American Sign Language, and was it ALM or something like ALS, and then the second gentleman talks and he's signing while he talks, but it's not him talking, it's a voice that's voicing over as he's signing. It is the strangest little video.
Huh. Well, yeah, interesting. Again, that's 2 p.m. Eastern time on the Wednesday.
And by the way, just in case you have slept through the last 2 or 3 days, we had to fall back this past weekend, which is why Derek and I lost 25 hours instead of one. But you had to set your clocks back 1 hour. So make sure when you look at 2 p.m. Eastern, you're on the correct time.
Yes. Before we go, another plug for the interview with David W. Lowe on A View from the Bunker, his new book, Deconstructing Lucifer, which we mentioned last week.
He's controversial show.
Yeah, he's got a different look at...
Not highly so, but I think that there may be a few things in there that people go, hmm?
Yeah. You know, basically his contention is most of what we know about Satan, Lucifer, is very likely wrong.
Do you know what you know?
And how do we know? And that's an important thing.
I'm not who I am.
And you were the guest.
I want to thank Stacey Harp and Randall Harp of Active Christian Media. They allowed me to participate with them this morning on Good News Monday. And you can go to Blog Talk Radio. We'll put a link to that show as well.
All right. So and more Sharon. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.